You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. On today's episode, we continue our series, Let's Talk, which, of course, as you might not know, airs of last Friday of every month. And this week, we're going to take a look at a deal too good to be legal. That's right. If you can see behind me, that is Epstein. And he struck a pretty sweet deal with federal prosecutors. Let me know your thoughts on this case in the comments section below. And with that, let's dive into today's episode. In 2008, a wealthy financier named Jeffrey Epstein quietly struck a secretive plea deal with federal prosecutors, allowing him to avoid federal charges for sexually abusing dozens of underage girls. Instead, he received a lenient state sentence and served just 13 months in a county jail, with work release privileges that allowed him to leave 6 days a week. At first glance, this looked like a miscarriage of justice. But as the years unfolded, that plea agreement would come to symbolize something far more disturbing: the ways in which wealth, power, and secrecy distort the American justice system. Epstein's case didn't just involve one corrupt prosecutor, one bad decision. It exposed the deep structural flaws that allowed elite defendants to manipulate legal outcomes through private influence, high-powered attorneys, and quiet negotiations hidden from public view. What became known as the sweetheart deal wasn't just lenient, it was corrosive. It broke faith in the system, it silenced victims, it shielded powerful friends. Perhaps most damning of all, it was completely legal. So this is the story of how Jeffrey Epstein gamed the system, why the justice system allowed it, and what his plea deal says about American law enforcement's inability or unwillingness to prosecute the powerful. Before Epstein's legal scandal became public knowledge, he was a name few people outside of elite financial circles recognized. Born in Brooklyn in 1953, Epstein never finished college, but through charm, networking, and what many now believe was strategic deception, he maneuvered into high finance. He started at Bear Stearns in the 70s and left under murky circumstances, soon launching his own firm, J. Epstein & Co., a private wealth management firm that boasted of handling only billionaires. Yet no client list was ever confirmed. His financial records remained mysterious. What wasn't mysterious, however, was his proximity to power. Epstein cultivated relationships with people like Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Prince Andrew, and Alan Dershowitz. He traveled by private jet and owned mansions in New York, Palm Beach, Paris, and a private island in the U.S. Virgin Islands. For years, he maintained the image of a cosmopolitan bachelor surrounded by models and young women. But beneath the surface, a darker story was unfolding, one involving underage girls, sexual coercion, and an international web of abuse that would finally come into focus in the mid-2000s. In 2005, a 14-year-old girl told her parents that she had been molested by Jeffrey Epstein after being recruited to give him a massage at his Palm Beach estate. The parents went to the police, triggering an investigation by the Palm Beach Police Department. What began as a single complaint expanded into a massive case. Police Chief Michael Ryder and his detectives launched a year-long investigation. They uncovered dozens of victims, some as young as 13, who described a consistent pattern. They were recruited by older girls, paid in cash, and abused in Epstein's home. The operation, as investigators later described it, functioned like a sexual pyramid scheme, with victims pressured into bringing in new girls in exchange for money. Ryder took the evidence to the local state attorney, expecting multiple felony charges. Instead, the state attorney appeared reluctant Despite the volume of testimony and corroborating evidence, he pushed for a misdemeanor plea. Ryder was outraged. He went around the state attorney and brought the case to the FBI, seeking federal charges. The FBI took the case seriously and identified at least 36 victims. A three-page federal indictment was drafted, outlining sex trafficking charges that carried a potential sentence of life in prison. It seemed that Epstein would finally face justice, and then everything just stopped. Rather than moving forward with the federal indictment, U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta, then serving in the Southern District of Florida, entered into negotiations with Epstein's legal team, which included high-profile attorneys like Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr. The result was a non-prosecution agreement struck in 2007 and finalized in 2008. Under the terms of the deal, Epstein pleaded guilty to two state charges of soliciting a minor for prostitution. He served 13 months in county jail with work release privileges. The federal investigation was shut down. No charges were filed against co-conspirators, who were also granted immunity. The deal was sealed, and victims were not informed until after it was signed. The Crime Victims' Rights Act explicitly states that victims must be notified of plea deals. But in this case, Epstein's victims weren't just ignored, they were intentionally excluded. Internal emails later revealed that prosecutors coordinated with Epstein's attorneys to keep the agreement secret from victims and the press. This wasn't just unethical, it was a direct violation of federal law. But for over a decade, no one was held responsible. Even Epstein's brief incarceration was a farce. He was housed in a private wing of the Palm Beach County Jail and allowed to leave 6 days a week to work from a private office. He reportedly spent up to 12 hours a day outside of jail, attended meetings, had access to visitors, internet, and even his phone. This arrangement was technically approved under Florida's work release program, but jail logs and court records show that Epstein's conditions were vastly more lenient than those given to others. He was essentially serving time in comfort, with little interference in his personal or financial life. He registered as a sex offender, but even the process was haphazard. He failed to report in multiple jurisdictions, including New Mexico, yet faced no consequences. He continued to travel internationally. He even hosted parties at his Manhattan townhouse, attended by celebrities and politicians, while on probation. For the wealthy, prison is often symbolic. For Epstein, it was merely an inconvenience. And for his victims, a signal that their pain just didn't matter. Epstein's plea deal didn't happen in a vacuum. It was the product of a legal culture shaped by influence, access, and privilege. His legal team didn't just argue its innocence, they overwhelmed the system. They flooded prosecutors with motions, delayed hearings, discredited victims, and pulled strings behind the scenes. Excuse me.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams One Coat Coverage Interior Paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
Alexander Acosta in later interviews defended the deal by claiming he believed Epstein's attorneys could destroy the case in court. He said the agreement was the best way to ensure Epstein faced any punishment at all, but legal experts across the political spectrum dismissed that reasoning. Prosecutors aren't supposed to pre-negotiate defeat, especially in cases involving minors and serial abuse. Acosta's critics pointed out that he had a duty to pursue the case. no matter the opposition. Instead, he conceded to the defense. In 2017, President Trump appointed Acosta as Secretary of Labor. He would resign in 2019 amid public outcry over the Epstein deal. What the plea agreement showed was not just how much Epstein had gamed the system, but how ready the system was to be gamed. It had no mechanisms to resist the powerful, no accountability for prosecutors, and no transparency for victims. The deal was not unusual in structure, but in scale and secrecy. It became emblematic of a two-tiered justice system. In 2018, investigative journalist Julie K. Brown published a bombshell series in the Miami Herald titled Perversion of Justice. Her reporting reopened the Epstein case and brought national attention to what had previously been dismissed as a local legal anomaly. Brown interviewed dozens of Epstein's victims, many of whom had been teenagers during the abuse. She connected the dots, revealed the number of accusers, and demonstrated how the legal system had actively shielded Epstein and silenced his victims. Her work was widely credited with forcing the government to take another look. In July 2019, federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York arrested Epstein on new sex trafficking charges. He was denied bail and held in the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan. Dozens of victims were prepared to testify. For the first time in over a decade, it looked like Epstein might finally face real consequences. But he never made it to trial. On August 10, 2019, Epstein was found dead in his jail cell. His death was officially ruled a suicide. But inconsistencies in the timeline, camera malfunctions, and missing records ignited a firestorm of conspiracy theories and further eroded trust in the system. Epstein's plea agreement lives on, not just in legal textbooks, but in the collective memory of a broken justice system. It showed the public in excruciating detail what survivors have known for decades, that justice isn't always about guilt or innocence, it's about power. The NPA protected not just Epstein, but his entire network. Women like, The non-prosecution agreement protected not just Epstein, but his entire network. Women like Ghislaine Maxwell, who was later convicted in 2021 of trafficking girls for Epstein, were allowed to walk free for years. Other alleged enablers were shielded by a deal that had never signed, but one that protected them anyway. Survivors are still fighting. Civil suits continue. More names emerge. More records surface. But for many, the damage is done. The Epstein case demonstrated that justice delayed isn't justice, isn't just justice denied, it's justice manipulated. Try to say that five times fast. When Julie K. Brown's Miami Herald reporting hit the national stage in 2018, it didn't just reopen an old case, it ignited a firestorm. Brown's reporting humanized the story by centering the voices of Epstein's victims, many of whom had spent over a decade being ignored, disbelieved, or manipulated by a legal system stacked against them. The headlines painted Epstein not just as a predator, but as a man shielded by wealth and a web of elite connections. Social media exploded. Politicians who had once remained quiet on the issue were now demanding inquiries. Protesters gathered outside Epstein's home in New York and Palm Beach. Calls for Acosta's resignation as Labor Secretary intensified. The public began to ask broader questions, not just about Epstein, but about the people in his circle. Who flew on his plane? Who visited his island? Who else knew? Documentaries followed. Netflix's Filthy Rich and HBO's The Vow reinforced what survivors have been saying for years, that institutional failure and societal complacency allowed men like Epstein to continue abusing without consequence. The media, once complicit through silence or normalization, now had to confront its own role in ignoring the warning signs. For victims, the shift in public discourse was both vindicating and frustrating. While they were finally being heard, the realization that Epstein had escaped meaningful justice while alive cut deep. For the broader public, the Epstein case became a kind of morality tale about modern power. An elite predator dodging accountability, enabled by a system that only punishes the poor. With Epstein dead and the criminal charges off the table for many of his associates, dozens of survivors turned to civil court. In 2019, the Epstein Victims Compensation Fund was created using money from his estate, which was valued at over $600 million at the time of his death. By the time the fund closed in 2022, it paid out over $120 million to more than 150 women. But financial compensation, while important, was never the point for many of them. These women have spent their youth being abused, silenced, and ignored, wanted truth, transparency, and public acknowledgement. Civil lawsuits were also filed against entities and individuals believed to have enabled or facilitated Epstein's actions. These included Ghislaine Maxwell, who was ultimately convicted on multiple charges related to Epstein's sex trafficking operation, Deutsche Bank and J.P. Morgan Chase, accused of ignoring red flags while Epstein moved money through their institutions, the U.S. Virgin Islands government for failing to monitor Epstein's activities on Little St. James. In the aftermath of Epstein's death, reform became a buzzword. Congress held hearings, victim advocates appeared on cable news, legal scholars penned op-eds calling for sweeping changes. But years later, much of that momentum has faded, and many of the issues that allowed Epstein to evade justice remain unresolved. The core issue is prosecutorial discretion, the unchecked power that allowed Kostick to cut a secret deal without informing victims or the court. While prosecutors are granted wide latitude in plea and negotiations, Epstein's case showed how that latitude can be abused. Another problem is the lack of meaningful consequences for prosecutors who violate victims' rights. Acosta resigned in grace, but no criminal or professional sanctions followed. This sends a dangerous message that even if the law is broken in the process of shielding predators, accountability is optional. Finally, there's the issue of elite immunity, the systemic tendency to treat wealthy, well-connected defendants with kid gloves.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.